All right, cool. So for some of you guys who've been around here for a long time, you may have, we've gone through this because every once in a while, it's really important to go through a sugar lesson, right? Because we're constantly bombarded with the opposite messages when it comes to sugar. So it's important to just kind of steep yourself in this stuff here. So, you know, right off the bat, you know, sugar is not your friend. And it feels weird to even say that, to be honest, right? Because we're so conditioned. I mean, it's crazy with the sugar. And I got some ads I'm going to show you in a few minutes just so you can see it. Because I don't know if you've ever seen it with smoking, right? If you've ever seen the smoking ads from way back in the day, they're very interesting, right? You almost can't believe them. But a lot of the most egregious ads were like doctors, you know what I mean? Saying, well, this is the healthiest cigarette. And but anyways, the sugar is the same thing. And so it just doesn't have the same, there hasn't been the same blowback yet, you know, to sugar. And not, maybe there never will be, I don't know. But it certainly is not your friend as much as we have all these positive associations to it. Just real simple. And you know, again, I want to be clear, I'm going to talk about this in a second, but I want to be clear. I'm not all or nothing. And I always joke around how I can talk about sugar and I think about sugar literally almost like a drug, like right on the same level as cocaine. Now, whereas I'd never done cocaine, I never would. Sugar, I'll talk about it this way. And then sometimes I'll eat it. I'll consume it. I just had some Swedish fish. Right? So I just ate some sugar. So again, I want to be clear that there's a weird, this is a lesson I should do. Because I remember, I think it was Lenore I was talking with. We were talking about cognitive dissonance. Right, that should be a good lesson, actually. I should talk about that. But so anyways, we can hold two things at once, right? We can think of sugar as being really bad for us. And at the same time, we can do it sometimes, okay? But if you're really serious about your health, if you're really serious about your weight, I think it makes a lot of sense to get the sugar under control, you know, for some of the reasons that we're going to talk about. It's not natural, right? So I think this is one of the first things, one of the first kind of pillars I like to knock out when it comes to sugar. It's not your friend and it's not natural, right? So a lot of times we tend to think like, you know, again, you get the sugar cane and you just tap it on the side and the sugar falls out. It's not like that. It is extremely, extremely processed, right? It's relatively a new substance in our reality, in our cultures, relatively, okay? It's not a natural thing. If you just were left your own devices, you wouldn't be eating sugar. There wouldn't be most likely be none grown around you. And even if there was sugar cane grown around you, or beets, you know, sugar beets, which they make a lot of it out of, you wouldn't be able to process it the same way it's processed now. And so just like cocaine, right, where it starts at the coca leaves, it's a very intense process of refinement. You know what I mean? Like it's extremely processed to get it down to that powdered substance, you know, at the end, that elicits such a strong and immediate reaction within our bodies and in our brains. Okay. So I think it's important to recognize that it's not a natural thing. Okay. Now again, what we're going to do here, as usual, we don't want to just avoid it. We don't want to be like, oh, I love sugar, but I'm not going to eat it. We want to change the way we think about sugar. And I think that's a much more effective way to change your consumption of it. And it's a lot easier, right? To just kind of change the way you think about it. And as usual, you know, we're not BSing ourselves. We're not making up lies. We're just looking at the honest truth, right? Once again, we're kind of waking ourselves up from the hypnosis. We're waking ourselves up from the lies and seeing what it truly is. And as usual, I want to reemphasize this because this is so, so important. I'm going to say things here. And again, it's going to sound, because we just think of sugar as sugar, and what I'm going to say here can sometimes kind of change your perspective of it. And then you might be like, oh, okay, that's it. I'm not going to eat any more of it. And then you might eat some more of it, right? So I want you to understand, just as this whole process is, it's a process, it's a journey. And so you need to be persistent, gentle with yourself, okay? Allow yourself the time to make mistakes, to learn, to grow, to evolve into the person you want to be. It doesn't all have to happen in a moment. Okay. And so be persistent and gentle with yourself. You're dealing with a lifetime of conditioning, and you're dealing with a substance that literally is hardwired into our brain to light us up. Okay. So it's a very, very addictive substance. And in our culture, it's just, there's so much built into the sugar thing, so much conditioning. So understand, it doesn't just all go away in 1 second just because you hear this stuff. Okay. But this should be the beginning of it. And hopefully it'll help begin to reframe it. you know, for you. So, okay, so the effects of sugar, right? It triggers a release of opioids and dopamine, which activate the brain's pleasure center, similar to how cocaine does, right? Just real simple, just straight up simple brain science. And this is what's interesting about sugar. I don't know if I mentioned this. This is one substance, like you can literally give babies, our old babies, and their faces light up. Our brains are really hardwired for sweet and sugar. And so again, evolutionarily, maybe it's because when fruit was around, fruit was a temporary, you know, thing. It was around for a couple weeks at a time. Maybe it really supported survival to eat the hell out of it. You know what I mean? And so our brain's lighting up when we taste some sugar and sweetness, you know, maybe that's why, but regardless, that's what it does. So there's really something going on here deeper than just you like it. How about this one, right? So again, speaking of cocaine addicted rats would switch over and preferred sugar instead within 2 days, you know? So it's crazy, right? It really is this hardwired in thing. Cocaine's very unnatural, right? So we don't have natural kind of built-in pleasure centers for this. The sweetness is natural, right, across the world. So there just seems to be more wiring built in to enjoy that. It changes your taste, right? And this is one of the big issues that, this is why I really like to restrict sugar. Again, this is kind of a holistic thought, that if you're eating sugar regularly, your tongue gets calibrated to sweeter tastes. And so more bland foods taste bland and boring, and they're not as appealing. Okay. And so when we have less sugar, when we have less refined, hyperpalatable flavors in our diet, we tend to be able to make more distinctions among the bland foods. And so bland foods aren't as bland, right? Everything's relative. And so sugar definitely changes your taste. So a couple of the health effects, right? You may know some of these. Obesity is linked to it, overconsumption of sugar. Type 2 diabetes, heart disease, cavities, certain cancers, increased wrinkles, and fatigue. Right? These are all associated with an overconsumption of sugar. And we'll talk about why that is in a moment. So insulin's role in blood glucose control, right? We kind of talked about this sometimes, is real simple, right? When blood glucose levels rise after a meal, right? So all the food we eat is broken down into glucose. It goes into our blood. And then what happens is our pancreas has to release insulin to clear it out of the blood. Right? We can't have too high a glucose level in our blood. It's very unhealthy. It's bad for us. So our pancreas releases insulin to clear it out. And basically what the insulin does, metaphorically, the easiest way to remember it is it's like the key, right? That opens up the muscle, fat, and liver cells to absorb the glucose from the bloodstream, right? So the insulin goes in, it gets the cells to open up, absorbs the glucose, and clears the blood out, right? Lowering the blood glucose levels. Insulin stimulates the liver and muscle tissue to store excess glucose. Okay. So, that's one reason why we're seeing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, right? Another reason is because again, the liver processes sugar as well, and turns it into fat. Okay. Then finally, you know, in a healthy person, these functions allow blood glucose and insulin levels to remain in the normal range. Again, everything's about keeping that balance. So anytime where sugar is really at the sugar, flour, why? Because these are hyper-processed foods, right? And so what happens is they're almost like pre-digested to a certain degree, if you want to think about it that way. There's not much to slow the absorption into the blood. So again, it's that tsunami effect that when we're eating sugar, when we're eating flour, these powdered substances, they're very, very quickly going into our blood as soon as we consume them. And it's spiking up this blood sugar and it's creating this whole process going on. And so what's about insulin resistant, right? In insulin resistance, the muscle, fat, and liver cells, they're not responding properly, okay? And so eventually what happens, just like anything, right? Just like drug, when you get used to doing drugs, is you gain some normalcy to that substance, right? And so that's what happens with the cells. If you're constantly consuming a lot of sugar and you're constantly spiking your insulin levels, your cells eventually kind of become resistant to it. Right? Because they just become normalized to it. And so they don't as easily absorb the glucose from the bloodstream, right? And as a result, the body needs higher levels of insulin to help glucose enter cells, right? So it becomes a compounding problem. The cells stop responding as well. And so now the pancreas dumps out more insulin. And again, it just becomes this downward spiral process. So the pancreas tries to keep up with this increased demand by producing more. As long as it produces enough insulin to overcome the insulin resistance, blood glucose levels stay in the healthy range. And then over time though, right, and this is what leads to insulin resistance, it can lead to type 2 diabetes and prediabetes because the cells fail to keep up with the body's increased need for insulin. Right? They just can't keep up with it. Without enough insulin, excess glucose builds up in the bloodstream, leading to diabetes, prediabetes, and other serious health disorders. One other thing I just read about is they were talking about when there's too much glucose in the blood, it's called glycating. But what happens is the sugar, glucose, is kind of sticky. And so what it can do sometimes is it can cause proteins to stick together. And so that causes more problems. So the point is, right, we know that there's kind of issues with it, but I want to give you kind of a look under the hood here so you can understand a little bit more. So that when you're eating sugar, I want you to be thinking, okay, I'm about to spike my blood sugar, but I'm also about to spike my body with insulin. Okay, that's how I like to think of it. And so what we're doing by thinking of it that way is we're shrinking the cause effect, right? Because some of you say, okay, I don't want to eat sugar because I don't want my teeth to get bad. Well, they're not going to get bad that day. I don't want to eat sugar because I'm trying to lose weight. Well, you're not going to gain the weight that day, right? But you are going to spike your insulin levels. You are going to spike your blood glucose levels instantly. You are going to tax the whole system as soon as you eat a lot of sugar, a lot, right? So again, I want to be clear. A little bit of sugar isn't going to have the same effect. So sugar consumption, I want to show you this, and I'm going kind of quick. Sorry, Jolene, because I know I'm talking faster, but I got a lot of slides and I don't want to go for too long here. But I find this really interesting that this is sugar consumption over time. And this is what I was talking about by saying it's pretty unnatural. Now look, right? Look where most of us were born. You know what I mean? Like somewhere, you know, from the Second World War on, look at the spike in sugar consumption. And by the way, not only the spike, but at this point, it's normalized, right? So it's like we're born and it's normal. Sugar is all around us. Consumption is high already, and it just keeps going up and up and up. And we don't even recognize how much more sugar we're eating because we've always had sugar in our lives. And that's what we're all dealing with is, again, we almost can't even see it because it's been there the whole time. It's the nose on our face that we delete. The sugar's just always been there. And so what I like to point out here is what's normal, what's natural, is where this graph doesn't show, right? Which is the previous, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 years that people were living in the civilizations. There was no sugar practically, right? It was practically zero. Why? Because it only grows in a couple of places and it's hard to produce relatively. And so, again, you have to understand, right? The companies are only concerned with profits. And that's why I say this lesson's so important. It needs to be repeated. That's why I give this lesson somewhat regularly, because we need the repetition to remind us of what the truth is. And the truth is that sugar consumption, as we know it, is completely unnatural. It's never been done in the history of the world, right? Look at this graph here, right? Before, you know, even whatever, 200 years ago, you know, we're close to zero, you know? And so within the last 200 years, it's just gone bonkers, right? And so what are the effects of this, right? I think these graphs, you know what I mean, kind of tell the story, right? There's a similar trajectory. Is sugar the only thing that causes diabetes? No, I don't think so, but I think it's a big driver of it. It would make sense, wouldn't it? Flour and sugar consumption's gone through the roof during that time, and so is diabetes. There's something going on, you know, with diabetes. So there we go. I think those charts kind of match up a bit, you know? So average sugar consumption, let's talk about this a little bit, right? So I love this one. In 1822, so we're talking about whatever, 200 years ago, like I was saying, the average American consumed 45 grams of sugar, the amount found in one soda every 5 days, right? And by 2012, and this is going up consistently, we now consume 765 grams of sugar every 5 days, right? So that's a what? Oh, 14. Oh my God, that's a 16 times increase. Okay, so again, it's just gone. It's gone bonkers, you know, over the last 200 years, and even more so over the last you know, couple of years. So, recommended sugar intake. Now, this is America's sugar intake. It is recommended for men 9 teaspoons or 37 grams, women 25 grams or 6 teaspoons. I want to point out the World Health Organization suggests half of that, right? And Okay. And so, as I said, you know, we now on average consume 153 grams a day, right? So on average, you know, we're consuming what, 4 or 5 times what's recommended by US, 10 times what's recommended by the World Health Organization. Okay. Now, again, I recommend these numbers. I don't want you to freak out, right? If you're a sugar consumer, I want you to relax with this because it can feel overwhelming. But I just want you to understand, I'm doing this to give you a frame of reference that's more accurate than how we normally think about it. Because again, it's like the wallpaper. We just got used to it. It's omnipresent. It's always there. And so I say this just so we can realize how not normal it is to eat this way. And I think that's the first step, is recognizing, well, this isn't normal to eat this amount of sugar. And I think when you really start to absorb that and believe that and understand that, it makes it easier to consume less of it. Right? So that's why I'm sharing this stuff with you here. Okay, so a few sugar facts. The three most common sources of sugar: sugar cane, sugar beets, and then corn sweeteners. And those are really making a fast, play for the first spot, right? High fructose corn syrups. Sugar used to be very expensive, right? Because again, it was only grown in certain areas of the world, and you had to process it, right? And again, it was considered a fine spice. And so again, when things are a fine spice, that's great. That's how you should use it sparingly, right? Then it doesn't have all these big problems. Because sugar doesn't really nourish your body and only provides calories, it doesn't have any established daily value, right? There's no need to have any of it in a day, right? There's no nutrition to it. And again, in experiments, animals will work almost as hard for sugar and fat as they do for cocaine, which is another way to say it's really addictive. And so if you're really serious about your health, if you're really serious about your weight, to sit there and have a raging sugar habit, it makes it very, very difficult. It's like if you had a cocaine habit, it'd be really hard to be healthy. Right? It might be good for weight loss, I don't know. But so again, you know, it's like we want to do this because we want to make it easier, right? And so I want you to think about it that way. 61 names of sugar. I say this because they've gotten very sneaky with this. And so what I want to do here is I want you to be able to see through their tricks. The tricks that they do. And so they call it all different names, right? You can kind of quickly look through it. You might recognize some of these. Some of these I'm sure you've never heard before. Every time I put this up, I learn a new one. Icing sugar, never heard of that. Invert sugar. Galactose, like that. Sounds like a superhero or something. So again, 61 names of sugar. Why do they do that, right? Because what you have to do on nutrition labels is you have to list the ingredients in order of how much they are, or how much of it's in the food. Right? So this example here, the whole wheat, whole grain wheat is the most, maybe is the number one ingredient by volume. Okay. But the reason they break it up into different ones is because now if you added all those sugars together, maybe it would be number one. It would almost certainly be number two. Right. And so what they do is they split them up so that you don't see sugar in the first one or two or three or four ingredients. Right. And it's very sneaky because again, once this is what I mean, like there's so many layers to this. I'll tell you what I found one, right? As far as I'm talking about the sugar, not sugar, reading labels, right? Cause I become kind of a label detective over the years. And so it was like a couple weeks ago and my wife had gotten, banana chips, right? You ever get like the dried banana chips? A lot of times they're like a co-op or something. And they weren't sweetened. So I tried them first. I was like, oh, these are gross. Usually they're kind of sweetened with something. And I was like, these aren't very good. And so I was looking at the nutrition label and I'm like, they were way high in calories. I was like, what the hell? I'm like, these are bananas. They're just dried, right? Turns out they're fried in coconut oil. So I mean, it's just like, I cannot tell you how many times in my life I've just been shocked. Cause I just assumed one thing, read the label and found out, oh my goodness. You know what I mean? Like there's all this other stuff in there. And that's always the first step. The first step is we have to know what's good and bad. And that's not easy anymore, right? Because they're tricky. They're very, very smart. And so they do things that they know how our psychology works and they do things to kind of sneak around that. So you really got to become a label detective, at least initially. You know, until you figure out what you're going to normally eat, then you don't have to pay attention to it. But they're just tricky with it, right? So again, they got new labels now, and these are pretty much, again, I know like the Trump administration kind of slowed this whole thing down. This was supposed to go into effect and they slowed it down, but it's on some things. Eventually everything will probably have this new label. And the big, one of the big deals about it is that it breaks down the sugars. Okay. So you can see on the right side, there's total sugars, right? And so we used to think total sugars was just like, oh, that's just sugar that's in the food. Now we can see what the natural amount of sugar is and what the added sugars are. Right. And so, again, that's somewhat considerable. It's not the most in the world, you know, this here, but again, that's a serving size. There's 8 servings in this container. I don't know what this is, whatever this label's from. But again, the one on the right is the new thing, and it shows you what the added sugars are. So start paying attention to that, you know, at least initially, because you need to get a framework of how much sugar is in what, okay? So that you know how to, because if you don't know what it's in, and I promise you, you don't know. If you're not paying attention, you do not know. One of the ones I talk about is, what was it? The, pretzel chips, right? So I had these pretzel chips. This was like a year ago. They're just pretzels and they're flat. And I was like, I was just looking at the ingredients one day and there was sugar in them, right? So there's sugar in almost everything that's processed, it seems. And so you really have to get a ballpark of what you're eating, what the sugar is in it. Because if you're not, I promise you, you're consuming more sugar than you think. And what you're doing is you're making it harder to master your weight and your health, right? Why do I want to do that? I put this statement by the Sugar Association just so you can see that these people that have convinced you that sugar is so friendly and happy and young and birthday cakes and kids, they're like the cigarette companies, right? They don't care about your health. They don't care if you get diabetes at all. And I think this statement just really proves that. Okay. So this was, I just showed you the sugar label, right? So, right. Who's going to have a problem with showing added sugars, right? There's the natural sugar that's in some foods and then they add sugar on top of it. Okay, so why would that be a problem, right? And so this is what they wrote to him, right? The Sugar Association is disappointed by the food, the FDA ruling to require an added sugars declaration and daily reference value on the nutrition label. The extraordinary contradictions and irregularities, as well as the lack of scientific justification in this rulemaking process, are unprecedented for the FDA. We're concerned that the ruling sets a dangerous precedent that is not grounded in science and could actually deter us from our shared goal of a healthier America. I mean, you know what I mean? So again, I just say this so you can understand that the sugar is not your friend. You wouldn't be, at some point you will probably, I don't know if this will happen, but you may think of sugar like cigarettes in the sense that the sugar companies know how damaging this stuff is in our society, right? When you look at those diabetes numbers and the cancer numbers and all the things that are related to overconsumption of sugar. They know about that just like the cigarette companies knew about it. And they do stuff like this to hide it from us, okay? So this is what we're talking about. And I tell you this so that you can reframe sugar a bit and not think of it as our friends and our buddies. So some hidden sugar sources, again, the kind of recommended, right? We talked about that. A 12-ounce can of Coke just alone has 39 grams. So basically one can of Coke has the recommended daily amount of sugar, right? And so the top sources of sugar in general, soda, baked goods, candy, ice cream. I would add to that processed foods, right? And there it is. Anything that's processed, again, we've talked about this before, but salt, fat, sugar, right? Those are the big three because they light up our brains, right? They're addictive and they cause us to overconsume. Right. And so, as I said, you got to become a food detective so you at least have a chance. Here's an example. Right? I put this up because this is so shocking to me, but I love this because if you know Nutella, you don't think of it this way, right? Look how much sugar is in it, right? So they broke it down into the ingredients, right? Look how much sugar that is. Like half the jar is just sugar, right? And we don't think of it that way. So again, if we don't understand this stuff, we can't even trick it or figure it out. So real quick, I just want to cover this, how advertisers hypnotize us. So real simple, receptive subject, right? Relaxed, not questioning, absorbing. As I said, we've all been born into this. And so it's just normal. And even though it's increasing over time, it's always been a ton of sugar in our lives. And so sometimes it'd be hard to see it. So it's very hypnotic. These advertisements, they appeal to our emotions, right? Not logic. They're not trying to talk you into why sugar is great for you anymore. although they used to. They're really just dealing with your emotions. They're looking to associate the emotions in meaning to the product, right? So candy's fun. Soda's youthful, right? Fun. Sugar's really associated with fun, with youth, right? And so we hold on to that, and it influences our decisions. They're conditioning our perceptions, right? How we think about it. Again, we think about sugar in such a happy, fun way. We don't really think of it like cigarettes, like the cigarette companies, right? Even though they're more closely like that than they are, you know, fun. Unusual, catchy, and funny. Again, right? The stuff just sticks in our head, right? These weird jingles, the weird commercials. They catch us off guard, and they stick in our head, so we remember them. And then finally, the most important one is repetition, right? Because they just keep, it's repeated over and over and over and over again. And then finally, actually, is the big lie, which is really, the lie is so big. And what that lie is, I believe, is that sugar is just this normal, natural part of our diet. And again, I say this because we've all been born into this. And so it's such a big lie that we can't see it. You know what I mean? It's always been around us. Oops. So we already did that because we had double slide here. You get to see it twice. But I told you repetition is good for that. All right. So sugar ads, right? So these are real sugar ads, right? They used to sell sugar as a diet tool, right? So the sugar can be the willpower you need to overeat, right? So what they would say is they say, hey, when you get hungry, eat some sugar. So I say this stuff to you, right? I show you these ads because this is the mental, this is your psychological foundation that the, again, you were born into, or you're already born and these ads were out. And so it's just running around deeply in our unconscious, these ideas, these messages, right? The same thing with people that were smoking, people that were born in the 1900, like between 1900 and 1910, 20, cigarettes were healthy. They were good for you, right? And so that psychological foundation influences all of us as we move forward. It makes it harder to see the truth. Because we're running ads like this for a long time. Right? Here's another one, right? It keeps your energy up and your appetite down. Can you imagine? Right? Nibble on a cookie about an hour before lunch, right? So you know what I mean? Like, look, imagine they just put this stuff out, right? Sugar information. Sugar's nature's essential element, right? So again, you know, sugar is a vital factor in a healthy diet. As we just talked about, it has no nutritional value. Doesn't even have daily recommended value because it has no nutrition in it. Right? So it's just lies from the sugar company. So how do we change the sugar perception? Recognize the marketing, right? So this is, the truth is always your greatest weapon. And so when you're seeing these ads for sugar, and again, that's how I look at it. Like when I see a soda ad, I consider it a sugar ad. When I'm seeing candy ads, it's a sugar ad. You understand? So when I'm seeing candy, soda, ice cream, all this sugar stuff, I'm seeing it as a sugar ad. I'm not getting caught up on the window dressing of what it is and what it's going to taste like. I'm defining it as sugar. Just like you may do that with cigarettes, right? If you're a non-smoker, you don't know menthols. And I don't, I remember I worked at a gas station. There's a million different types of cigarettes. Like there's Marlboros and there's hard packs, soft packs, you know, filter, non-filter. I don't know, on and on. But if you're a non-smoker, it's just there's cigarettes or not cigarettes, right? You want to do the same thing with sugar to a certain degree. Right? It's all just sugar. Don't get caught up on the, you know, the flavor characteristics or all the specifics of it, right? Define it as sugar. Recognize the marketing, how it's all just kind of BS, right? All this stuff just to try and get you to eat more sugar, right? It's not to entertain you. It's not so you have more fun. It's so they can make more money. I strongly suggest you watch a video about how sugar is made, right? I watched one of these. It was a 2-minute video and I was just shocked. I couldn't believe it. I never thought of how much processing was going on there. And that made an impact on me. Look up a video about what it's like to live with type 2 diabetes, what the real effects of it are. Okay. So again, what are we doing? We're combating our perceptions with truth. And a lot of times the truth will win out. You will find the conditioning is so strong that if you don't reinforce this somewhat regularly, the old perceptions will just come back and overtake the new truths. Okay. That's just normal how it happens. So you have to somewhat consistently, when you're struggling with sugar, this is what I suggest you do. Go watch some videos about how sugar is made, what it's like, you know, type 2 diabetes, other effects that it has on you. There's documentaries on it. I'm sure there's TED Talks on it. There's all sorts of videos you can watch about what sugar, what's going on. And most importantly, I think, is changing the unconscious associations you have. And so what do you think the negative effects on you are, right? So you want to personalize it. And so maybe eating sugar, you know, makes you feel kind of depressed. Maybe it kind of bums you out. Maybe it gives you more cravings. Maybe it makes you tired, right? Maybe it causes you to eat more and gain weight. Whatever it may be, take a few moments and start to think, what are the negative effects on me? Physical, mental, and emotional. Connect with those effects to really feel them. Take a few minutes. If every time I eat sugar, I get out of control with it, I can't stop eating it. Okay, you feel that. And then bring yourself forward 1 year. Bring yourself forward 5 years, 10 years. What's the accumulation of this if you don't fix it? Okay, this is very powerful. Go into a future with too much sugar, right? See yourself getting older. Because again, we tend to think of our bodies, a big mistake, we all do this, right? Because I hear this all the time. So how much you want to weigh, right? Someone who's 50 years old. And they say, well, I want to weigh what I weighed when I was 20. But I, every time I try it, my body doesn't lose weight the same way. Your body, it's kind of like a car, right? You wouldn't think of a car with 100,000 miles on it the same as you think with 10 miles on it, right? Our lifestyles affect the machinery, okay? And so however your experience has been with sugar up till now, it's good chance it may not be the same the next 30, 40, 50 years, right? Your body is a machine that changes with your lifestyle, okay? So again, it doesn't hurt to just be honest with yourself. And this here, by the way, it doesn't have to be 100% rooted in science and fact. You can just imagine yourself. You can just ask yourself the question, what do I think my life will be like in 10 years, 20 years? If I consistently am, if you're eating a lot of sugar, if I maintain the same sugar consumption, what do I think is going to happen? And just allow your imagination to fill in the blanks. Okay. It can be a very, very powerful, you know, process to go through. And so here's some simple ways to lower your sugar intake. First one, right? Drink more water, right? It calibrates the tongue, improves brain function. It's really, really helpful. So I find drinking water is a simple way, right? So I was looking to put as much value into that as we can. So that's one other thing, is that it helps you reduce the sugar intake. Program in less sugar is probably the key one. Begin by thinking about what sugar habits you would like to change, right? And I guess even before that, you want to recognize what sugar habits you have. Right? Big ones, small ones, right? Ones that are happening daily, weekly is where you want to start. And again, understand that sometimes we miss this because it's like, oh, okay, well, on Monday I have a candy bar, and, you know, Tuesday I have a soda, and, you know, Wednesday I have a piece of pie, and Friday. And we, our mind says, oh, those are all different. We have to start looking at what is my sugar consumption, in looking past the product, right? Past the form it's in, and just seeing it as sugar, okay? And again, I'm not saying you can't have any sugar, right? Because a little bit of sugar is fine. It's really not gonna bother your body when it's a little bit of sugar. When it's with those daily recommended values, if you're below that, you should be fine, right? Most people will be. But again, as we've seen, it's very easy to blow way past those recommended values. So look at what sugar habits you have, and then think about which ones you'd like to change. And then again, we know how to change things, right? So we identify, you know, where the issues are. And then we say, what do I want to do instead during those times? Not just, okay, I'm going to stop doing it. That creates a feeling of deprivation. We want to ask, what am I going to do instead? Okay. And so an alternative food, an alternative behavior, whatever it may be. And then you program that new behavior in, play it through in your mind as if you've been doing it for the last 10 years, right? See yourself doing this new behavior, see the sugar gone and the new behavior in its place. One other thing I'm going to add to this is, again, I don't think you have to get rid of all the sugar. And so you should program in when you're going to eat sugar as well. Okay. I should have put that in here because I'm starting to realize this is more important than I've realized in the past. To just say, okay, no more sugar, it instantly causes the feeling of deprivation. Like all of a sudden we're saying, oh my God, no more sugar ever again. That's terrible. So what we want to do instead, what works a lot better, is we say, okay, no more sugar, you know, Monday through Thursday. And on Friday and Saturday, I can eat sugar, right? And you structure it, you program it in, because two things happen there. A, when you're not eating the sugar, it doesn't feel as bad because you know you're going to in a couple of days. Okay, so that makes it easier to comply with what your goal is. The other one is this: when you program it in, you're like, okay, I'm going to have it here and here. That's when I eat sugar. What will happen is, just by programming it in and knowing you're going to do it, that almost always is going to make it healthier than not thinking about it at all And then when you do it, it just feels like, ah, screw it. I fell off the wagon anyways. You want to program it in. So this is why I say, don't be all or nothing with this. I would never, if there's one thing that could make me more sugar than anything else, it would be like, okay, I'm never going to eat sugar again. Right? Instantly, I'm feeling deprived. Instantly, I'm like, oh God, never going to eat sugar again. I'm just obsessed with it. What's a lot easier for me is to say, I'm going to have a little bit of sugar, you know, after dinner. I'm going to have a little bit of sugar, you know, during the weekend. Okay. And you program it in. Okay. I strongly suggest that. And finally, visualize all the secondary benefits to your health, weight, and life with less sugar. Right. And so what are those? More energy, balanced moods, healthier taste buds, better brain function, optimized body performance. Right. And I really mean this. Optimized body performance. You wouldn't put sugar in your gas tank of your car, right? I couldn't pay you to do that. Right. You have a strong visceral reaction to putting sugar in your gas tank of your car. Why? Right? Because it messes up how your car functions. Hey, guess what? Right? When you're eating a ton of sugar, it's doing the same thing to your body. Right? Our body can recover, but only for so long. Right? It's cruel to do to your body to consistently put that much sugar into it. Right? It guarantees, in almost all cases, poor metabolic function. Right? And why? Because again, you know now, because you can't just keep tsunamiing your body. You can't keep flooding your body. Remember that tsunami stuff again, right? It's profound. Tsunami, flooding. If it rains an inch, you know, every day for the week, right? The sewer systems can handle it all. If it rains, you know, 20 inches in an hour, right? It's a whole different thing. It could be the same amount total, but if you get it all in an hour, it overwhelms the system, right? That's what's happening in our bodies. It's overwhelming. Our body can't handle it. Okay. And it causes all sorts of kind of, you know, issues. So imagine your life, you know, with a lower amount of sugar in it. Right. And again, yes, you do have more energy, right? For a number of reasons. It takes a lot of energy for your body to fight off that sugar, right? That's how I want you to think about it. So that takes up a lot of energy. There's not this up and down spike roller coaster kind of feeling. The balanced moods, you know, obviously, because they go again with the spikes and the crashes, your moods are right there for the ride. Right? Healthier taste buds. Again, you can taste better. You desire more natural tasting foods, better brain function, right? Again, the roller coaster effect, it affects your brain as well. And then obviously the body stuff that we talked about. Okay. So cool. All right. So if you guys have any questions, I see there's a little bit of stuff in the chat. Let's get to that. Let's do this later. This updates. All right. What do we got? Thanks for talking about the effect on the body now when we eat sugar. That makes it more motivating not to eat it. Fortunately, in Australia, we don't have corn syrup as an ingredient in our foods. Wow. Unless they're imported from the States. We do have a huge sugar industry. Yeah, that's interesting. Tamar, I'm glad you said that, right? Because I think it does make a huge difference when you think about the effect now on your body, you know, as opposed to it being somewhere in the future, right? That's just naturally, time makes a difference in our motivation. You know, so I think that's a good point. That's great that you don't have high fructose corn syrup. I'm telling you, this is one of the greatest experiments ever conducted on a population. I mean, I can't just single that out because there's so many things, but high fructose corn syrup's right at the top of the list. Why? Because we subsidize corn in this country. So corn is super duper cheap. And so I did mention it, but it used to be sugar cane, sugar beets, high fructose corn syrup. And high fructose corn syrup is very quickly becoming the main thing. Because it's the cheapest thing. But high fructose corn syrup is worse than sugar and beet sugar because it's not a natural thing. You couldn't make high fructose corn syrup in your house. I mean, it's super duper processed. And, you know, just like they had, what was it? I'm blanking on the name of it now, the hydrogenated fat that they outlaw now, right? Because the way they were making it, the way it was reacting in the body was very dangerous. And high fructose corn syrup, I don't think it's not as acutely dangerous. Like you don't notice it right away, but the chronic consumption of high fructose corn syrup, that is not well known what the effects of that are. So that is, if you're going to eat sugar, eat some real sugar at least. That would be a strong suggestion I make for you. That's interesting. Connie said, I never thought of eating a piece of candy as spiking my insulin. Right. Now again, it depends. Right. So I was just eating, I ate like two Swedish fish before I got on the call here. How much is that spike in my insulin? Not much. You know what I mean? I mean, how much sugar is in there? you know, maybe 10, 15 grams, maybe not even that much, you know, for two or three fish. So again, if you're keeping it below, again, everybody's different. So I don't want to make this sound like this is a universal law, but if you're keeping it under, you know, 20 grams at a time of sugar, but it's very easy to go over that. And don't get me wrong, special occasions, go over it, have fun. You know, it's the consistency of it that's the problem. It's the, okay, I had a muffin in the morning for breakfast. I had, you know, a cookie at lunch. I had a piece of pie for dinner. And you know what? Never mind that. And so I had a, you know, chocolate milk for lunch. There's another 30 grams. You know, I had a Gatorade when I was driving to work, right? There's another however many grams of sugar. It's the hidden sugar that's almost always the bigger problem, not the very obvious things we're consuming. But that can be an issue too. Let's see here. Yeah, that's interesting, right? Yeah, the piece of candy. Like I said, the piece of candy, it depends. I mean, the candy bar versus like a Werther's, you know, candy, they're going to have different effects, you know, but it's a good way to think about it. How can effects of sugar not be grounded in science? You know, how do they live with themselves? Right, Jillian? It's crazy making. By the way, I always call this my George Costanza technique. You guys remember George Costanza from Seinfeld, right? And I joke around with that because sometimes to help us eat better, I find it depends on your personality, but sometimes I get so mad, like cigarette companies. I don't know if you ever watched that movie, The Insider, with Russell Crowe. It's like that movie made me so mad at the cigarette companies. And now I've read a lot of stuff about them that just makes it even worse. But these companies just don't care about you. And they're just bullshitting us. You know what I mean? Like they're just lying, straight up lying to us. Yeah, Rachel, I mean, it's crazy, right? They're just saying anything they can to keep making a profit and not have us questioning it. It's no different than the cigarettes, I'm telling you. The cigarette thing, they knew about the cancer long, long before it came out, right? That's the whole thing with the cigarettes. It's the same thing with the sugar companies, I promise you. They know that this increased sugar consumption is leading to all kinds of health issues. And they're sitting on the facts and the data, they're spinning it, you know what I mean? So that once we kind of get a hold of it, then they spin it around in a way that it doesn't make sense to us sometimes. They're not on our side. They're trying to hurt us. Connie says, Jolene, sugar is marketed to consumers. Medical business makes money off treating sugar-related diseases. Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, it's all about making money. I mean, it's certainly, there's no question, right, that there's kind of this wheel of, I mean, you could get conspiratorial about it. I don't think anyone would argue it too much that certainly we have foods that make us sick and then we have a healthcare system that makes a lot of money off of that. And we certainly rarely get to the cause of what the problem is. And without question, one of the core causes of our sickness in our America, at least in a lot of the world, is the way we're eating, you know, and sugar's right at the top of the problem there. Connie says, from what I observed, when my husband suffered from type 2 diabetes, the doctors were glad to give him insulin and he took it so he'd eat more sugar. He admitted it. Yeah. It's like, you know what it's like? It's like the heartburn medicine. You ever seen the heartburn commercials? Right. I guess, you know what I mean? At least they're being honest. It's like, hey, you want to eat this stuff that's going to, you know, just ravage your body. I mean, that heartburn is your body sending you a signal like, please stop. Please God, stop. You know what I mean? It'd be like they came out with a pill that allowed your lungs to, you know, dilate so that you could smoke more. Right? It didn't cure them, didn't fix your lungs. It just made it so that you could smoke more. That's what a lot of these pills are like. And so again, they're just managing the symptoms, right? They're not managing the causes without question. And on top of that, Connie, I'll give you another one. With type 2 diabetes, what's really fascinating about that one, go to your supermarket next time and look at diabetic food. If they have a section for diabetic food, go read it and go see what's in the ingredients. Well, you know what you're going to see? Sugar, high fructose corn syrup. And it's like, it's insanity. Again, it's the big lie. Like you wouldn't believe it's possible that type 2 diabetics would be specially marketed food for diabetics that has lots of sugar in it. It's a crazy world, but it's true. Carol says it's so addictive, isn't it? My husband freaks out without dessert. Yeah, you know, listen, I freak out without dessert sometimes, but I've shrunk dessert down into like a couple pieces of dark chocolate. You see what I mean? So it's not about getting rid of stuff as much as it is about tweaking it so that it fits into your lifestyle. Remember, we've talked about this, like try and keep as many of the anchors as possible. And one of the strongest anchors we have in our culture is eating something sweet after dinner. Okay, so you don't necessarily have to get rid of that. We just have to modify what it is, make it more natural, right? That's the first step, right? So if there's high fructose corn syrup in it, at least switch to something that's at least just sugar. And then once you have something that's sugar, okay, now you work on reducing it and cutting it down, you know, to a reasonable thing, because everything's relative. So if you consistently are cutting it down, you know, you get to a point where it's like a little bit, but it's fine. It's normal to you. Okay. So I don't want to ambush you with a technical question, but can you please talk about the inflammatory effects of sugar? Inflammation just in and of itself is fascinating. So inflammation, I'll tell you, I've researched this, and what I find is that I've heard some people, Dr. Hyman, he calls obesity and overweight literally an inflammatory disease, right? Literally the cells of your body being inflamed. Now, here's where it gets hard to kind of, it's a huge topic because it's our whole body, literally our whole body can get inflamed depending on what we're consuming and what's going on. So it starts to become overwhelming to talk about it because there's so many different levels of inflammation. But yes, sugar absolutely can create inflammation in the cells, certainly in the cells that it's touching, right? It's a very processed substance, right? You know, even like there's sugar in the raw, right? Have you ever seen that? Honey, right? Honey's got sugar in it, but it's in a form where it's not going to hit your blood like that, right? Even the sugar in the raw, it takes your body a little bit to break down that outside part of it. Honey, it takes a little bit for your body to break down, you know what I mean, the honey to get to the sugar. And so again, don't get me wrong, those are both, we're going to spike things, but it's still even slower than refined sugar, you know, that we're talking about. So absolutely. The inflammation that happens within our digestive system, just because the sugar is, again, I don't know, you know, I don't think comparing it to cocaine, I think there's a lot of similarities there. To be honest, even flour, right? We're taking something that's in a whole, it's in its whole form. And we're, in all three cases, right? We're taking things that are in their whole form, and we're processing them down into their most concentrated part, right? So that we get why? Because we get the strongest, fastest effect. That's what makes things so addictive. You understand? It's like the things that affect addiction the most are the time between taking it and the effect of it. And so with sugar being so processed, we consume that sugar and it just dissolves and it's instantly in our bloodstream. Cocaine, people do it through their nose, because again, it goes right into those tissues, right into their bloodstream. And the same thing with flour. What's up, Lenora?
So something that you're saying is really hitting me, and which is what I was hoping with kind of bringing that question, and brings me back to my undergrad in psych. And that what you just said about how quickly, so it's part of it is just like it knocks you upside the head. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, with addiction, the other thing about what makes things really addictive is the shorter the high. So the shorter the high, and then the crash is one of the other components of addiction. So that is really helping me reframe this in a new way.
Yeah, that's awesome.
One of the things that I did was I did your, the craving eliminator. Mm-hmm. And I kind of did that broadly for sugar. And it actually really helped for like, really processed stuff like the old Easter candy. I still have some old Easter candy. I haven't even given it a second look.
Right.
It just has no appeal to me whatsoever, which is great because like the week before I was like gobbling that stuff up like nobody's mm-hmm. business. And now I'm going for the piece of dark chocolate or the fruit or whatever, which is great. So it's really, it gives me hope to kind of have this kind of a gradual shift. And
that's what it is. And that's why I teach this lesson. Cause again, I mean, there's stuff like you say, like with the craving eliminator, the craving crusher thing, it's like, sometimes it just sticks and you're like, wow, okay. But it's like, it needs to be reinforced. I always say this, we don't live in a vacuum. You know what I mean? So it's like, you got good conditioning coming in this way here, but you constantly have all this bad conditioning coming in fresh In addition to, I can't overstate how important it is that we were just born into this thing. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's just, it's normal and natural, this ridiculous level of sugar consumption.
You know, in my household, for dinner every night, we would have like a big old bag of Chips Ahoy. This is back when they had bigger packaging.
Yeah.
And everyone, brace yourself, everyone got their own row. Every night.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. That
was every single night, your right. own row.
Right, right.
It's insane.
I mean, first of all, I look at like cereals is probably one of the most insulting things in our culture, especially for kids. It's so ridiculous. And you're just cranking these kids up with so much sugar. And again, this is why I don't make the distinction between this and cocaine in terms of, I don't know how we as a society just say, oh, it's not a big deal, when we know it is.
Yeah,
you know?
And I think it's a huge contributor to heart disease as well, because I think it's part of that inflammatory condition.
Yeah.
And like keeping our bodies in an inflammatory state, which is an issue for me health-wise, mm-hmm. that I'm trying to overcome. So there's a lot of incentive for me to keep moving in this direction.
Yeah. And you have to keep doing it. That's why I'm, and even I've got a lesson coming up. I'm working on it right now where I'm reading a lot about aging, and that's the first time I've read about, because I know I've read a lot about inflammation, but this is the first time I read about actually having glucose in the body. And I believe the word is glycate, which is basically means it sticks. And so the glucose in the blood is grabbing proteins, and it's causing damage. Let's just put it that way. And again, I want to understand a little bit more. But I find the aging paradigm is another one. And I'm going to share that with you. I don't know if I'll do it next week or a couple of weeks in the future, but I want to share that aging paradigm with you, because again, what we're looking to do here is we want to make the weight loss secondary as much as possible. You know what I mean? Like literally we want to make this life or death, because it is, you know? And so you're right though. Like the sugar is on such an unnatural level, and I'm right there with you. I used to eat sugar cereal. And not only that, then I put sugar on top of it. And then the sugar went to the bottom, and then I'd scoop it out with that was breakfast. And then I have ring dings, yodels, chocolate milk for lunch. And then I get home for a snack. I'd eat a bunch of candy. Then dinner, we'd have dessert. And then that night I'd eat a bunch of same thing, ice cream, cookie, blah, blah, blah. And it makes you, it has all sorts of effects on you physically, mentally, and emotionally, right?
Yeah.
Bananas. So the more you understand this stuff, it is inflammatory, just like doing cocaine up your nose is going to inflame the tissues up there, right? It's an inflammatory substance. And so it's the same thing with the sugar. And again, why is because it's so, think about it. There aren't that many things that we eat that are so processed down, you know what I mean, to their core thing. And sugar, flour, cocaine, again, heroin, these are things that start off as plants, you know what I mean? They got all sorts of stuff on the outside of them. So it's like if you chew on a coca leaf, you're not getting the same effect as snorting a line of coke, right? Because if you chew on a coca leaf, there's stuff, it takes a while for your body to break it down and absorb that. And so again, we don't even think about it, that we're getting such a refined substance and we're putting this crap in our body and we don't even see it. It's wreaking havoc, like literally. So yeah, I'm glad you shared all that stuff.
Thank you.
It's true. Thank you, Lauren. I appreciate you saying that. Inflammation's fascinating too. I want to do a lesson on that. Like I said, I studied it and I kind of hear it here and there, but I want to find more about inflammation because I find that fascinating. And I have a generalized idea of inflammation that I use to avoid sugar, processed foods, flour to a certain degree, because I know that these all cause. So here's what's interesting about inflammation, the way I think about it. There's the substance in when it hits our body, it's causing inflammation, that's part of it. But the bigger aspect of inflammation is when we're putting foreign substances into our body or something our body doesn't agree with, and our body releases its defense mechanisms on it. Our immune system attacks it. And that is the bigger aspect of inflammation. Is our body in a constant state of attack or defense, if you want to say, from all the foreign invaders that are going on. And it's systemic. It's very much, it's just like, it's like when you see these, like a tsunami, or a flood roll into a town, it's systemic, right? You can't say like, oh, you know, the flood came through and I don't know, it messed up things. It messes up everything. It messes up the functioning of the whole town. You know what I mean? So it's like, you can't say like one thing was affected by a flood, right? The whole system is affected by the flood. And that's what's going on in our body. And that's why I think inflammation, I have a hard time even conceptualizing it, because it's systemic. It's the whole system is freaking out that you're putting these foreign substances in. And again, I keep referring back to cocaine, because if you put cocaine into your body, it's such a hyper concentrated thing that your body is responding in all kinds of ways, right? So it's not just one thing. It's a systemic problem. And which is frustrating, because sometimes when things are systemic, it's not as powerful, right? It's not as visceral to think about what's the effect on me. But it is systemic. It's affecting everything. And the sugar is affecting everything in our bodies. So yeah, Carol says, I realize that this conversation is about sugar, but where do you put processed flour, which has much the same reaction in my body? I don't have a sweet tooth, but I start it on a loaf of bread. I can't stop. Yeah. Okay, Carol, I'm glad you asked that. I think of them as the same thing, you know? And I got to tell you, no one ate more bread than me. I mean, I love bread. One of my saddest days, I think I mentioned this. I was interviewing Isabel De Los Rios. I don't know if you know her. She does, I think it's called Beyond Diet now. But anyways, I was interviewing her and I said, what's the biggest misconception people have? And she's like, that whole wheat bread is healthy for you. And I was like, oh, what? I still remember doing that phone call, because I said, what? Because I was eating whole wheat bread and I was like, oh, you know what I mean? I'm gold here. I didn't realize that it's the flour. It's the same thing, right? So yeah, this is about sugar, but it's also about flour in a way. You know, I lump them together. And my strategy for that is that, again, I structure it. So I eat Ezekiel bread during the week. I don't really eat any flour during the week, rarely. But on the weekend I do, right? So sometimes like I'll get like a loaf of sourdough bread and I'll make, you know, like sourdough bread and stuff in breakfast in the morning. I'll eat some pasta on a Saturday night. And again, it's made with half chickpea, right? So it's a little bit better. It doesn't break down the same way. But yeah, flour needs to be managed. And I hear you. I'm right there. I mean, I could eat a loaf of bread like nothing. I love bread. I love it. But it's like, I just can't do it because, yeah, it's the same thing, right? And so we all know this, right? So the gluten thing, right? There's another example of inflammation. And I think we can conceptualize this one a little bit more. Sometimes the gluten gets in our body, and depending on your body sees the gluten as a foreign substance, right? And so what happens is you have a immune response to it, right? And so we get stuffy, right? We get this inflammation because that's our body's way of dealing with a threat, right? And so sometimes we're seeing these things as a problem. So yeah, that would be my suggestion there. And you're lucky you don't have a sweet tooth, but they're the same thing. You know, a sweet tooth or a bread tooth, you know, they're kind of the same. And so what do? Yeah, you just, you know, you basically, you slowly wean it out. Not completely though. Again, I don't think, it's up to you. Obviously you choose what you want to do. But for me, I find I'm able to not eat it during the week because I'm always in my mind knowing that the weekend I'm going to eat it and I'm going to really enjoy it. Because I enjoy it anyways, but I also enjoy it emotionally and psychologically because I know it's the proper amount, right? I eat it, you know, it's not ruining my body. It's not affecting my weight because it's in the right place, okay? And so I'm using all the things that I tell you. Sometimes I eat it during the week, but really, really rarely. You know, I intentionally don't eat flour, right? And so what happens is, again, what I like to look is it's just a nice even for your body. When you cut the sugar down, you cut the flour down, you're giving yourself a much more even reality, you know, physically, mentally, and emotionally. You're not having these spikes and these, right? Life's crazy enough as it is, right? Life's tough. So it's like, you know, we can't have these ups and downs. I mean, it just makes things so hard. So when you reduce the sugar in the flour, I think it just makes more smooth sailing. I without question, you know, I found that. And it just feels better. So that would be my suggestion to you. Connie says, Carol, I think bread is basically sugar, isn't it? Yep, it is. Other than whole grain or sourdough that is made with the long process. Yeah, right. And so, you know, even, I don't know, even like kind of older, like the way I understand it is flour, again, flour, what is it? It's powder, right? We're powdering stuff. When we powder things down, it's probably not the best, you know, in most cases, especially the way that wheat influences our blood sugar. It's the same thing, right? Flour, wheat flour and sugar both spike, you know, our blood sugar. So yeah, I think of them both as sugar, and I work to reduce them, you know, tremendously. You know, even sourdough and whole grain, even if they're healthier, and I know there are breads that are healthier, I can't do it. Like I couldn't eat that sourdough that I get for the weekend. It's like, it's gotta be gone Sunday night. And if it's not, I'll toss it or whatever. I don't want it around because I'll just eat it. And I don't want to be thinking about it and all the rest of it. So again, I've kind of put it into a very specific spot, and that works for me, and it reduces the deprivation. I'm good with it. I'm good with just eating on the weekends. It feels fair to me, right? So during the week, if I'm thinking about, oh, I'd like to eat a sandwich or I'd like to eat bread, it's like, yeah, I might have that initial desire, but there's another part of me that says, yeah, but we're not going to do it because, again, we got this lifestyle that we follow, and we can have it on the weekend and enjoy it. And then that balance works well for me. And you know, you got to find your own balance, what works well for you. Connie says, I remember my first cereal as a toddler was called Sugar Jets. Yeah, right. I didn't even talk about cereal. Cereal makes me insane. My son is in, my daughter, they're both in school. It was a 7th and 1st grade. And it's like, I hear what's going on. And it's like, you know, I don't know. Behavior stuff to me, I would, that's the first place I would look. I don't know if I'm crazy, but it's like, if you're eating, like I was saying, what we were talking about, I was talking about Lenora there. I mean, I was easily eating 100, 150, 200 grams of sugar a day, easily. And I mean, now I look back, if this, I was drinking orange juice. I mean, it was crazy. And the thing is, right, here's the thing. My mom loved me as much as a mom can love a kid. So this is the thing. This is the interesting emotional part of the whole thing. And then this goes into our perception of it, because we link, if the person, the people that love us the most in our lives are saying, oh, here you go, you know, here's some cereal, here's some sugar, da, da, da. And again, they don't mean anything bad by it. They just don't know. But we associate, again, that the sugar gets framed within that. You know what I mean? Like literally the sugar gets framed within that love. And so you got to be clear that you, and this is a process for me and my mom, my poor mom. You know, it's like cooking is so important to her and food's so important to her. So, you know, the changes that I've gone through over the years, sometimes she would take that personally, you know, and this is a whole thing. I just do a lesson on this because this is, you know, when you make a change in how you're eating, you're affecting the people that are close to you in various ways. And rapport is one of the key ones. And so it's important to make the distinction that, you know, the way I eat, the food does not dictate the love, you know, and that sounds, it sounds like obvious to say it maybe when you say it out loud, but the way we feel, it's linked all up in there. And then there's a lot of stuff involved with it, but yeah, anyways, a little diatribe there, but the cereals are so ridiculous. I can't stand it. Try shooting a sugar cane. Yeah. Right. Try shooting a sugar cane. That's what I mean. Watch a video about how sugar is made. I was shocked. You know, it's a process that I don't even know how you'd make sugar at home. I don't think you could. You certainly can't make high fructose corn syrup because you need real advanced equipment, scientific equipment, which you shouldn't be doing to it. Instant mashed potatoes are bad for you too. Yeah, I believe that. I wonder why. Is because of the stuff they have in them? Yeah, I don't know. They add crap to everything. That's why, to be honest, that's why I don't like to eat a lot of processed food. You know, just simply because I don't know how my body's responding to it. But if it's a foreign substance, I think that stuff all the time. I was thinking that the other day, that it's just like the sugar thing. We've gotten so normalized to eating the craziest stuff that we don't even see it as strange anymore, you know, and that's a problem. You know, it gets normalized. It's kind of like they made heroin legal or cocaine legal. And it's like, all of a sudden you start seeing ads for it. And then, you know, people are just doing it when you go out to the bars or something. And, you know, all of a sudden it just becomes normalized. Right. And so it doesn't seem as bad. That's what's happening with our food. And so we put these substances in our body. Who knows how our body's going to respond to it? You know, it could absolutely have an immune response to it. I think that's a real thing that's happening somewhat regularly. So anyways, start with the sugar, though, you know, and the flour. If you take too many things with it, sugar and flour where I'd start with it, because they're addictive, especially the sugar more so than the flour. Okay. But they're both addictive, and they both kind of wreak havoc on how your body functions. And so, by the way, right. So the growing up, like, I would eat all that sugar and then I'd eat all that bread. There was bread at every meal. We had pasta every night, sometimes multiple pastas. My mom, again, pasta lady. So it's like all that sugar, all that pasta. It's like, I'm again, you know what I mean? With the blood glucose and the insulin and And I'm so thankful not to be doing that to myself anymore. Right? So, and I hope you are too. So cool. Thanks, Lenora. Yeah, she'll feel fine. In a way, she loves getting hurt. You know, kids love getting the only one she gets the, you know, the initial shock over. All right, everyone. Well, thanks a lot. Have a super duper week. And yeah, we'll talk next Tuesday. Good night, everyone.